Good evening. Thank you all for coming on this holiday evening. I'll remember this next year to sign up for a talk if I want to do a nice intimate gathering of Dharma friends. It reminds me that I've been on jury duty this week, and Monday and Tuesday, you know, you call the day before, and I was canceled, and I called just before I came here tonight to see if I was needed for jury duty tomorrow, and up on the, I didn't call, I went online, and up popped a screen that says, "Your jury duty is now completed. Thank you very much for participating in this great civic opportunity." So I guess I'm excused for the rest of the week. Yes?
I hope I have the same message next Monday.
Oh.
Next Monday.
Yeah.
They're calling Buddhists in
now. Yes, they are. They're doing the but anyway, so it's a holiday week, and it's been a great day. Cool this morning, and very easy to be out and about this afternoon. As you know, I've been looking at the Vimalakirti Sutra for the last several weeks, and I'll speak some more about this this central sutra to our Mahayana practice. You know, that's the name of our religion. That's the school that our Zen practice comes from, and central to this excuse me, practices the bodhisattva ideal. This bodhisattva that totally immersed in the calm ocean of non-duality, emptiness, Buddha nature. The bodhisattva lives in this contemporary world fully as well, totally immersed in this day-to-day life of coming and going, with the vow to show others the liberation of their lives living out and realizing their Buddha nature, saving all beings, leading them to realize their liberation, and being in touch with their Buddha nature, their own true nature of liberation. So that's what our school points us to, and it points us with sutras like the Vimalakirti Sutra, like the Lotus Sutra, like the Diamond Sutra, like the Avatamsaka Sutra, the Prajnaparamita literature. It tells us exactly how to do this life as a bodhisattva. exactly how to do it. And it doesn't tell us that we have to live like the monks in the monasteries of 2,500 years ago. It says exactly in this life, this is how you do this practice in this life of climate change, in this life of populist politics, in this life of Brexit, in this life of punitive immigration policies. It says exactly what to do. I guess in the same way that when we go to Shakespeare's Santa Cruz, we learn about love and we learn about power. And it doesn't feel like the only way to fall in love or the only way to understand power is to be in Renaissance England. So it's nice to look at this literature that was given to us by Shakyamuni Buddha 2,500 years ago and say, yeah, this is exactly my life. This is how to do it. I'll take that advice. I'll look at that carefully. I'll sit with that and see how it lives in my body. See if it resonates. Or I'll plant the seed of the Vimalakirti Sutra and see how it grows if I just go from page to page and advice to advice. As a matter of fact, I think when I announced that a group of us from Santa Cruz Zen Center was going to go Saturday to the immigration policy march downtown, I said, we're going to bring our practice down there. And that's, I think we had a good group from Santa Cruz Zen Center there. I think we were all practicing wholeheartedly with the issue at hand. There was a good group from Holy Cross. I saw the Insight Santa Cruz sign. I saw the Quakers were there. I saw a group of Methodists. So there were lots of faith communities practicing with the issue at hand. And I was talking with one of the people that was walking in our group afterwards about the experience and of bringing practice to our lives and the immigration issue in particular. And we talked about this bodhisattva practice. And I didn't make up that metaphor of remembering Buddha nature, like the deep ocean where all is calm and at the same time fully engaging in the waves at the surface, which is nothing but the ocean. It's not separate from the ocean. But when we're bobbing and weaving on, you know, that storm of the ocean, you know, we think that it's two different things. We think there's this rough seas, and we think, oh, I can't wait till I can feel the bottom of that ocean again. Maybe in this practice of Zazen, when the Zen Center opens again tomorrow, maybe in the practice of mindfulness, when we're cooking our dinner after the march. But I can't wait to get to that calm place, because that ocean was just too rough. And to bring the Bodhisattva practice of always embodying the whole ocean, always realizing that this is the whole ocean. Always remembering, as the koan says, the one who is not busy, that's not separate from the one who's also sailing on the ship, on the surface of that rough ocean. So it was nice to kind of end the march with that discussion of bringing our practice, excuse me, to the rough ocean of our lives. I spoke a little about the first chapter the last time I spoke, about a month ago, where the Buddha is pointing out to Shariputra, actually showing him all the Buddha verses that are listening to this sutra at the same time as all the people gathered before the Buddha were listening. There's all these Buddha verses. They could see the light, the radiant light coming from all the Buddha verses around them. They could see all the jewel-encrusted chairs, like bleachers maybe, the jewel-encrusted bleachers that the other Buddha verses were sitting in. All the smiles, you know, on all of the people in the other Buddha verses or the Buddha fields were listening with. And Shariputra kind of looks around and says, you know, our world doesn't look like this. They've got it all, and you know, we don't have much here. And the Buddha then says, well, actually, you're sitting in this Buddhaverse right now, and you just have to remember it. And the way you remember is, and he gave a nice list, a list that we're pretty familiar with, a list that looks like practice, this very practice. The ticket to this Buddhaverse, the ticket to remembering our radiant light, is our practice. Things like the six Bodhisattva practices of perfection. You know, generosity, sila, morality, patience, mindfulness. Oh, the energy, remembering to remember. Oh yeah, I'm in the Buddhaverse now. And wisdom. I'm not separate from anyone else. There's no separation. Just like, you know, when you practice generosity, you go from a position of, you know, I've got the money and you need the money. When you turn over that money, you're immediately saying, you know, we both support a great cause. We're both supporting this cause together. When we practice that generosity, we stop being separate entities. We've dropped this person, maybe just a little bit, but we've come a little closer. We're a little more intimate when we practice that first perfection of generosity. Another group, another ticket to this Buddhaverse that we're in right now is the precepts, our specific guidelines for ethical practice. And what does ethical practice do anyway but kind of keeps the peace, kind of makes us more harmonious with everything around us. You know, the disciple of Buddha doesn't kill. The disciple of Buddha doesn't lie. The disciple of Buddha doesn't misuse sexuality. The disciple of Buddha doesn't take what isn't given. When we practice those, we're manifesting the harmony that's kind of intrinsic to the Buddhaverse. When we, for instance, don't speak of others' faults, what we're doing is we're not practicing over and over. You know, I don't like that guy because he always does this. We don't practice that over and over again. Where when we don't speak of that, or when we don't constantly think of what we call another person's faults, we're open to the wholeness of that other person immediately. And we're not continually practicing, you know, I think this is a pretty grievous fault that person over there demonstrates. We're not practicing that over and over again. So, excuse me. So, the way we remember that we too are in a radiant Buddhaverse, radiant Buddha field, at all times, is this group of practices. The Buddha in chapter 1 gives us a list of 18. I've just chosen a few that we already know. I think I mentioned last time the four immeasurables, the mind of joy, the mind of equanimity. You know, when we cultivate those, we're dropping this separate self and getting a little bit more intimate with the rest of the universe, with the rest of our environment. So that's how he told us, what his recommendations for remembering this harmonious Buddhaverse and how we remember it is these practices that we're pretty familiar with. When we're feeling particularly separate, when we've got a really good idea and we can't understand why everybody doesn't agree with that idea, that should be like a mindfulness bell to remember the Buddhaverse. Remember that, maybe I should be open to other ideas if I really want to remember the fullness, the wholeness, the radiance of this Buddhaverse, this Buddha field that I'm in. So we can use that feeling of separateness. Even the greatest idea, we can say, "Oh, that might be separating me from the rest of the Buddhaverse. I might want to look at that. I might want to be open." So that's how we can use our feeling of separateness to realize the Buddhaverse. Chapter 3 continues with this idea. Along with these great recommendations from the Buddha, there's a story going on. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Shakespeare. It's kind of fun following the story, as well as, you know, maybe even practicing generosity a little bit more freely. The Buddha has gathered everybody together to go help out Vimalakirti, because Vimalakirti isn't feeling well. Vimalakirti is sick, and the Buddha wants to gather everybody together to go pay him a call, maybe to chant the Enmei Juku Kanan Gyo, the way we did the well-being ceremony just this morning. Maybe he needs everybody to do that chant with Vimalakirti. But he gets everybody together and shows them that we're all in this Buddhaverse together, and we need to show some support to poor Vimalakirti, who's another great disciple. But he's not a monk. Vimalakirti, as most of you know, is kind of a rich guy. He's a businessman. He's a businessman that isn't afraid to help people on that Buddha path. You know, some of us like to help people on the Buddha path, you know, maybe by example. Maybe I won't exactly tell people that they should, you know, put a little money in our donation box before they leave. Maybe I'll just walk by that donation box and drop some money in. You know, they don't want to just tell people to cough it up. They want to do it a little bit secretly. But Vimalakirti is not afraid to say, "Come on, open your wallets, everybody. Put some of that money in." And that kind of rubs people the wrong way. So Vimalakirti is this kind of rich businessman who rubs people in the wrong way. Maybe we know somebody like that. Really is a great teacher for us. I don't know, maybe we could think of somebody that might be just like that. But Vimalakirti kind of rubs people the wrong way. So he turns to Shariputra, who's kind of right there, one of the head monks, and says, Shariputra, could you go visit Vimalakirti? And Shariputra kind of cringes a little bit. Chapter 3 is about a lot of these monks all being invited to visit Vimalakirti personally by the Buddha, and they all kind of cringe. So the first one is Shariputra gets asked. Maybe he's just sitting the closest. Shariputra, Buddha says, go inquire after the illness of Vimalakirti. Thus having been addressed, the venerable Shariputra answered the Buddha, Lord, I'm indeed reluctant to ask Vimalakirti about his illness. Why? I remember one day when I was sitting at the foot of a tree in the forest, absorbed in contemplation. Vimalakirti came to the foot of that tree and said to me, "Reverend Shariputra, you're doing it all wrong." Actually, that's me. "Reverend Shariputra, this is not the way to absorb yourself in contemplation. You should absorb yourself in contemplation in such a way that you can manifest all ordinary behavior without forsaking liberation." That sounds just like the Bodhisattva path. "You should absorb yourself in contemplation in such a way that you can manifest the nature of an ordinary person without abandoning your cultivated spiritual nature." He gives a few other suggestions in that same vein. One is, "You should absorb yourself in contemplation in such a way that you are released in liberation without abandoning the passions that are the province of the world." So, what a great practice we've got. That we can live fully with the passions of our life and yet still be absorbed by our radiant light, still be totally aware of the ocean, the calm ocean that is nothing but our life and our Buddhaverse. So this is Vimalakirti. This is Shariputra, of course, remembering when Vimalakirti, and Vimalakirti didn't just quietly watch. It must have been a pretty nice view, watching Shariputra from a distance underneath a tree, you know, maybe like up at Poganip, meditating. And Vimalakirti, you know, he could have said, "Shariputra is such a dedicated meditator. One day, maybe not in this lifetime, but he's really on this path to liberation. And that this is exactly how to do it with this practice. I really support Shariputra for all of his efforts." Vimalakirti could have said that, but because of his compassion, he really wanted to make sure that Vimalakirti was doing it the right way. Maybe he could even realize his radiant light, you know, right then and there. So he had no trouble, you know, walking up to Vimalakirti and tapping him on the shoulder and saying, maybe this should be the focus of your absorption here in Poganip underneath this tree. And so So this is how Vimalakirti goes around to all of the gathering and teaches them exactly the bodhisattva practice, and teaches them that connected to realizing this bodhisattva practice is this very practice of sitting. They're not separate. This absorption. Let me get my glasses back on so I can use some of the right words. You absorb yourself in contemplation in such a way that you are released in liberation without abandoning the passions of the world. So that this practice is the wholeness of our practice is nothing but swimming in the ocean at the same time that we are, our foundation is at that deep stillness in the bottom of the ocean. Other ideas that come up to me about this is this feeling of nourishment that I have from this practice. I think Kokyo called it this practice that really isn't about thoughts and ideas and saying that now I'm sitting at the bottom of the ocean or now I'm firmly on the foundation. But when we actually get up and we get into our cars and we start on the way home, I have a feeling of being nourished and fed and sustained by this practice. And another term is there's a trace that's left, maybe a perfume that we carry with us that helps us remember our foundation in the ocean while we are pursuing our passions in our little canoe at the top of that ocean. So there's terms of how we remember our Buddha nature, how we realize our Buddha nature at the same time that we're neck deep in the passions of our life, perfumed. And I think when on the days, some days I'm not here at the Zendo sitting, or some days I haven't prepared that cushion at my house to sit, and I don't feel as nourished, I don't feel as sustained, I don't feel as whole, and I might forget, and I think the more that we are nourished by this, we have this confidence that even in the midst of such suffering in our lives, or in the midst of being witness to such suffering, I think our practice gives us the confidence that we can enter this Buddha field over and over again, and with the mind of being fully in the Buddha field, despite the passions of our life being pretty, seeming a little bit overwhelming. I think our sitting gives us the confidence over and over again that I want to engage with the passions of this Saha world, this world of desire and suffering. I want to be in this world at all times, with realized Buddha nature, because I've gotten the confidence from my practice that there is nothing but radiant life, radiant light around me, and I can enter even this crazy, passionate world that we're in now. So maybe we can talk about our own, if we've got a few ideas about our own bodhisattva practices, maybe we can talk about other sutras that give us confidence in this Buddhaverse that we're in right now, that it's nothing but a Buddhaverse. What thoughts have come up? Charlie.
Well, not Paul, because we got a question. Vimalakirti, why do you suppose he was chosen for a sutra? Because he was truly wise, or because he was someone to be endured?
I think you know that you know, there was the Buddha gathering everybody around to visit the infirm Vimalakirti, and Vimalakirti proved to give pretty good advice with the Buddha's stamp of approval. You've maybe gotten more than 85% of this right, and so that's why the sutra kept going. Now, chapter 2 that we didn't talk about is where Vimalakirti, who is a bodhisattva, he's just not a monk, he's a bodhisattva in the world, who's vowed to save all beings, just like, you know, when we leave we're going to take that vow as well. Vimalakirti says that I'm actually not sick, but I'm going to pretend to be sick so that I can get everybody here to save all beings. This is one of my liberative techniques. So he's modeling that, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, it's like a Tupperware party. You know, you invite people in to have a party, but you're going to sell them the Tupperware. So he wanted to show them the great way to save all beings. So he invited them, maybe not a party, but you know, let's all get together and support each other, support one of our sick Dharma brothers and sisters.
So do you think chapter 2 is suggesting that that is a valid method, or is it more critical?
No, I think it just shows the variety of liberative techniques.
Dharma gates of balance.
Yes. And you know, even our statue on the back of the altar, you know, there's Kuan Yin Avalokiteshvara looking just stunning, you know, in her long dress, you know, with this great healing nectar. You know, who wouldn't be attracted to that? But other pictures of Avalokiteshvara show 11 heads, and some of them are nasty. Some of them, you know, to save all beings, sometimes Avalokiteshvara has to whip them into shape, has to scare them towards liberation. So it's not all just drinking peach nectar. It's sometimes you have to be scared in the right direction. And so I think this was Vimalakirti says, you know, it's about time that all of us, another great thing is, you know, all these bodhisattvas that are gathered there, you know, they're doing pretty good jobs, you know, meditating in the forest. Who could argue with that? So we get to hear Shariputra give a teaching on meditation. And then we get to hear Vimalakirti kind of just ratchet it up a little bit. And he does this again and again. In a later chapter, a whole bunch of the bodhisattvas give their teaching on emptiness that are all pretty good. And then we get to hear Vimalakirti also give a pretty good teaching on emptiness. So So Vimalakirti said to himself, I think it's time that I get all of my Dharma family together to have a discussion, which is what they're having here, a discussion on our bodhisattva practice. And we do that time and time again here with the classes that we have, with the three times a day sitting. We all get to go together with our Dharma family, and we do this practice, and we talk about this practice. So I think that's what's going on here. Is that a chant, or is that a quick question? You and then Neti.
So Vimalakirti have the great, sometimes annoying method of scaring people, and I'm feeling like I might need a little bit of a scare. So, do you have anything to scare me a little bit to inspire my practice?
Well, I'm not thinking of one right now, but are you inviting that kind of dialogue?
Sure.
Is that something that we could engage in?
Sure.
If I notice you kind of nodding off sometimes, maybe we could have. I mean, if I ever notice such a Neti.
Was it in the sutra? Was it in the sutra that when everybody comes to visit him, it's a tiny room and they can all fit in?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
The very small space, and yet they can all just keep on coming in and never get crowded. and it's never too full. It's a beautiful metaphor for, there's 10,000 gates to the Dharma.
Yeah, yes.
In many ways.
Yes. And a part of the good story is Shariputra sees everybody and sees this little hut and says, "Where are we all going to sit?" And Shariputra gets all the great lines. He's the comedic character in this sutra, just like Puck in the Midsummer Night's Dream, or Bottom in Midsummer Night's Dream. He's the comedic monk in the sutra. Where are we all going to sit? Or, it's getting time for lunch now. So anyway, thank you. May the merit of our sitting on these bejeweled thrones be dedicated to the comfortable lives of all beings throughout all time. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.